It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
God Journey.
Well, now I'm back from Rome.
Now you're back from Rome.
But you know what? We're recording early still because you're not going to be here when I get back. So now we're 6 weeks in advance or something.
You went to the enclave. Did you have that experience of, oh, wow, the foreboding, amazing hallway experience?
Not yet.
Not yet?
We'll have to see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
That will be interesting to find out. You're going to go walk down that hallway?
I hope I can. I hope it's open to people like me who want to go see it. Well, I hope it doesn't have to be signed, sealed, and delivered Catholic.
If they know what kind of books you're writing, you're out of there, dude.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a try. I'm more looking forward to spending time with a couple we're going to be with in Rome. So that's Rome's part of it, but there's this wonderful friend of ours from Switzerland that we're going to hang out with, and we're already exchanging some wonderful banter and emails preparing for our coming, so... This guy is just, he and his wife, they're hilarious. So we will have a riot around Rome and probably get put into prison for something while we're there. But.
Good. Well, have someone catch it on your phone.
But by the time this airs, we will be halfway through summer. Boy, that just seems... Of course, summer doesn't...
Are you having a good time so far?
You know, summer to me isn't any different than the rest of the year. Once you get out of school, what's summer anyway, unless you got kids?
Oh, I got kids, dude. Summer is massively different.
Then you've got to plan that. But since we haven't had all that for a while, summer's just a little warmer time of life.
Yeah. Life is full.
Unless I get to go to Australia, then it's actually cooler because it's winter down there. So they're actually about midwinter when they hear this. And I may go there in August. We're still thinking about that.
There you go.
Yeah, who knows?
Well, we were talking about purpose last time.
We were. That's why we decided to keep talking.
Yeah, well, I wanted to just pose the question, where does purpose, what place does it have in the life of the believer in terms of discovering your purpose and that kind of stuff?
It depends.
Oh, good answer.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, ladies and gentlemen. Go enjoy your summer. It depends.
Yeah. Well, we've joked before about being purpose-driven, and we've kind of made jokes about that. And actually, I saw an interview with him lately, with Rick Warren. And
he's actually a pretty good guy.
John Piper. They were arguing Calvinism or talking Calvinism, which was, I found a little difficult to sit through the interview. But I came to a fresh, and I won't tell you why, because I've told you the names, now I can't tell you why. But I actually enjoyed hearing Rick Warren talk about some of those things in a way I've never heard him talk about before. And I went, you know, actually... That didn't sound too bad. But what I say it depends is, I don't know. I think I used to be driven, and I probably that's why I react to it, when I was a young man, driven by this purpose of doing great things for God. And that wasn't all healthy.
See, I think your hang-up is on the driven side.
It is on the driven side. Definitely.
And I think
but it's also
I understand
on the,
that.
It's also on the purpose side in this way. If it's my purpose, I'm trying to get God to do, which was a lot of it.
Sure.
If we substituted maybe the word kingdom of God for purpose, if our purpose was the kingdom, as it seemed to have been Jesus' purpose.
As opposed to my kingdom?
As opposed to my, yeah, my kingdom, my comfort, my happiness, my, you know, our... Embedded deep in our documents is that right to the pursuit of happiness, as we say here in America, which, you know, I'm not sure that's the best way to have said it, though I like a lot of what the Founding Fathers said. I think we have grown up with the idea that my personal happiness, whether it's vocationally, recreationally, avocationally, whatever, that most people do live in the pursuit of their happiness, and that becomes their purpose. And then God's just... Another, as we talked last week, he's the fairy godmother to get him to move that magic wand and turn my rats into horses.
I wonder how the founders really defined that. I don't know, because I wasn't there. But I do wonder, it's like, if you look at, you know, what is true happiness, I got to tell you, it is found in that sense of peace and contentment with God. You know, I look at purpose, you know, the chief end of man is to love God and enjoy him forever.
And what scripture is that?
That's Augustinian dudes. A whole bunch of them in the 1500s came up with that. I think they were on
1500s, earlier than that, dude.
Or whatever.
Quite a way.
I wasn't there, again.
You weren't there?
I was late.
Yeah. Well, see, some of you youngins, you just don't get this stuff.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little whippersnapper, so I didn't whip, but I didn't snap.
I remember talking to Thomas Jefferson about putting that in the Declaration.
I was wondering if you were there.
I think what they meant by it, to just quickly
insert
this.
Okay, tell me.
Well, I think what they meant was, under the whole tyranny of kings, the individual is just a pawn of the state. And they didn't. No one had the right to pursue their own sense of well-being. And the idea of having a country in which all were created equal, at least if you were white, male, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant landowner, if you were that, then you get to pursue happiness on your terms. The state doesn't get to decide for you. And I think that's where the contrast was. But I think it's become more of a, I haven't seen people labor under the tyranny of finding a purpose in life that gives meaning.
You say that with some...
Well, it's a tyranny. It's a tyranny if you don't have it. Now, if we define purpose as the kingdom, I have lived my life under the tyranny of my own purpose for a number of years. The last few years, 15 or so, I feel like I am living more in God's purpose. But I know less about that than the purpose that I had in mind in terms of, you know, getting a best-selling book and doing all the things I thought needed to be done to make me significant. Laying all that down and finding now the simplicity of living for the purpose of God each day, which is for the kingdom to come here among men as it is among angels, that purpose is a very different reality for me, and I think it's absolutely core to my existence. Now, it is.
Sure.
It's what gives meaning to all the crud in life that comes at you and you just, oh gosh, if there wasn't a higher purpose in my life than just business and life and, life would be tough.
I get that. I think when I look at a lot of youth ministry, college ministry, young people who are, they're venturing out on their own. It's like they're leaving the confines of mom and dad and they're really in the throes of going like, what do I do? There is a huge vacuum and a need for discovery that what is the uniqueness of me? How am I gifted? God, what do you have for me? What do I give myself to? You know, I mean, there's vocational questions. There's enjoyment questions in terms of, you know, discovering what makes you tick. I think when people find those things, those are very valuable and can be wonderful. I think if all of a sudden they're driven by ambition and the need to achieve, they can be horribly perverted and hurtful to others. I mean, I think that the thing that I would resonate with when you kind of like the purpose-driven, it's like, gosh, when someone's purpose is more important than the person, that's a bummer. Because I think in the big scheme of things, I found like I got pushed along in that purpose and I didn't have the same ability that Jesus did to stop and take care of the individual that he never seemed to have difficulty doing. He wasn't about something more important than the people that were in front of him. And yet, you know, he knew, he said, you know, my food is to do the will of my Father. He knew what the Father was asking of him. And he knew what he was supposed to do, and he sought to discern when to do it. And so I go like, golly, that can be really wonderful. That can be at odds with other people's desires. I mean, there's a lot going on there, and I just wonder, how do we help people unpack that sense? Because I know when you don't have that sense of purpose, people can really be struggling.
I like how John defined it in John 13 when he talked about Jesus, when he talks about him washing the disciples' feet. He's saying knowing where he had come from and where he was going. That's just a great expression of identity.
Yeah.
He knew he'd come from the Father. He knew he was going back to the Father. And so there was a sense, but in this moment, it didn't make him, see, I'm the Messiah guy, and so washing feet is beneath me.
The
knowing who he was freed him to be the best servant in the room. It freed him to be the one that could do what no one else was considering doing and not even consider it beneath him or not even doing it as a teaching lesson. I mean, he talked about doing it because it was to show the full extent of his love. That I just love you guys, and because I know who I am and where I come from, where I'm going. So I think that kind of identity is incredibly powerful in an individual's life. And I think it is tough to find. I think early on, particularly at young ages, and this is where I think the conversation of community is so critical. What do other people see in your life? What do other people see of the way God makes himself known and the things you have aptitude for? And we've done this. I haven't done it more recently, but in communities I used to be part of in the past. We just take a night and pick a person and just talk about what do you see in this life. We both our kids on their 12th birthday, we invited close friends of our family over. And we had them pray a couple weeks in advance and just came over to celebrate the birthday. We had a party and all the fun stuff. And then part of the evening we just said, what do you either see in this child as you've related to them? And there was adults there as well as peers. What do you see in their life that speaks of God? Or what has God put on your heart that might be a promise to them or might be something that would open a door into their identity? That conversation in community, I think, is really, really key, because I don't know that we're always good at seeing what we're gifted at.
No, it's natural to us.
Yeah, if we're going to process that individual. I remember a sixth grade teacher, I had turned in a paper. It was a science report. And mine was about 4 pages long, and 5 pages. I remember holding up Susan Clifton's going, and a 35-page report, A+, you know, bindered, all, it was beautiful, and pictures, and I'm thinking, oh, crud, man, I'm dead. Mine's horrible. And then he pulls Wayne's up, and he says, this is 6 pages and does everything this 35 pages. And he turned to me and he said, you have the most amazing gift of writing I've seen in a sixth grader. Now, you don't think that has impact? I mean, that does. I remember a cigarette going, see, now I didn't know that. I just write in a report. I'm just trying to do a science assignment. And I actually got to visit him a few years ago. He's since passed away. He was a principal at a junior high school in the city near where I used to grow up, where I used to live. And I went by there one day, took him a copy of my first book, and told him how much his inspiring word had come to fruition in my life and how much I have always loved to write. And I think the love of writing came not before the sixth grade. It came partly because I felt like it was a gift that would resonate with people. That if I was good at this, then I loved doing something I was good at. I think that had an impact. So I do think that conversation, how do we help people? I think we don't often enough sit around a table and say, do you know what I love about you, Brad? You know what I see in your life that really blesses me? Or Sarah or Kelly? I don't think we have those conversations enough, because sometimes we're all tunneled into our own identity or what it is that I should be doing, that we don't often find those avenues. Or if we are getting together as believers, we're doing Bible studies or something. But sometimes it's refreshing just to, even just when you're with somebody for coffee, just say, you know what I'm blessed about by you? And that can help.
Oh, that is so valuable, because I feel like it's like looking in the mirror. I think we're meant to be a mirror to each other that reflects back what it is that I'm receiving. And I think most of us don't know. And if you're at all isolated, this is really hard to figure out. That's one of the real values of having community, having some people in your life, because they are able to affirm and provide some guidance and feedback that says, you know what, when you are in my life, this is the blessing, this is the benefit that regularly comes. I think when that kind of affirmation is there, gosh, it's like wind in people's sails.
It really is. Even to the people closest to you. I did a marriage retreat one time, and I noticed as we got together on Friday night, the bunch of the couples were, you could just tell, a lot of tension, getting probably off work and driving whatever and getting to this place and getting their stuff and getting to dinner and getting to a meal. There was a lot of tension in the room, just a lot. And I said, you know what, why don't we, before we start, let's get into just groups of about 3 or 4 couples. And why don't you just share with the group the 3 things that made you fall in love, 3 things that made you fall in love with your spouse? What did you love about them? And by the end of that sharing, which went on an awful long time, I couldn't even get the room back, which was wonderful. But at the end of it, couples had their arms around each other, holding hands. Just the depth of intimacy that came with it, just saying, these are 3 things that I love about you. And even that conversation is powerful in our... Unfortunately, we so rarely have it. We're usually so focused on ourselves, what I'm getting out of the moment, what I want to talk about. We don't even really ask the question, so what is it about Kelly that inspires me? I heard you say something about Kelly the other day that I thought was really, and I don't know if it was on a podcast, I don't remember where it was, but you talked about her being a great listener to people. And I just went, wow, that is really true. I don't know that I've ever heard that, would have noticed that. I don't get a lot of time with Kelly, but I think that's inspiring to hear that. People don't hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think the tyranny of the urgent squeezes out those kind of valuable exchanges. And I think one of the things that I can see in the life of Jesus is he did know who he was, where he had come from, and where he was going. But that also helped him understand the importance of what was in front of him.
Yeah.
And the who was in front of him.
Yep.
I mean, I think the thing that I get bummed about is when, in the name of purpose, we exalt a what over the who.
Yeah.
You know,
sounds like a Dr. Seuss book.
Maybe. You know.
The what over the who.
Well, yeah.
I can see that one.
Important here's a what. You know, what happened? I look at the dynamic of going somewhere in the economy of God, being able to discover how I've been uniquely gifted, and the fact that he has. I mean, I know you guys, I think we talked about this, I guess, with Derek a number of weeks ago or something like that. You know, that whole sense of, you know, God used me. And it's like, I think there's a positive side.
I know you do, and I'm hoping the light will still shine.
Yeah, okay.
But you're young.
I guess we'll get over this.
You're young.
I know that there's a desire that says, how can I bring my gifts, my talents, the what I've been uniquely gifted to do, in sync with what God's doing in the earth? I mean, you found that sense of writing. I mean, we love being in that sweet spot of going, you know what, this is what I'm for. And I think when you cannot locate anything close to that, that's hard. That's really frustrating for someone's life.
I agree.
And I think to be able to help see some of that, that's something that's liberating in people's lives. I think that is a worthy sense of going, like, how do I discover that? How do I help get that sense of affirmation from other people's lives? Not like, oh, you're so wonderful. But it's more like to be able to give myself to what he's purposed.
Which I think is the reason I chafe at that a little bit is because I think it's the opposite of the use me, use me, use me thing. I didn't come to writing because that's how God wanted to use me. It was, man, I have a gift there. I can write things in a small amount of space that makes sense to people. And that was a wonder that led me into seeing how God could use that in, you know, as part of what his work is in the world. But it didn't come out of the angst to be used or to be, you know,
I'm not really speaking about that.
Okay.
I think,
just thinking of the donkey, use me, use me, use me, use that time going, yeah, I don't know that it comes from there. But it might for you.
I love having a pick me sort of passion. And that's just me.
Yeah.
I look at the value for people when they do discover some of their unique giftings, and they're able to, in essence, release them as an act of worship, not out of the insecurity of their soul trying to say, well, see, I'm valuable. I just think there's things that are in us. God has prepared works for us that we might walk in them. To be able to see some of that, to give yourself to some of that, that's incredibly satisfying.
It is.
And I see that as a worthy pursuit, a worthy dialogue with God that says, Lord, help me discern and discover how to give myself to that. Because I think that's the intent when he says, you know, I want you to go and bear fruit.
Mm-hmm.
I think being able to recognize, well, gosh, what does that look like in my life?
And it doesn't have to specifically be, I guess that's where I want to say it. It doesn't have to specifically be ministry related. You can get the same joy out of remodeling a room or planting a garden there's lots of ways to find that sweet spot where you find God's favor. And there isn't anything that we do that can't involve even planting a garden, which seems like a horribly isolated experience. Well, look at all the people you're going to meet, buying seed, getting plants, talking to people. There's going to be people in your path that can be part of God making himself known, or if your business is remodeling homes or whatever. I think the writing is a little bit confusing because, well, that's a ministry thing, and that's how I have used it most of my life. But I think it's bigger than that, because I know right now, I would say my identity and purpose as a person, I wouldn't say as a writer. I would say, you know, we used this on a few podcasts back. It's not original to me. I don't know who came up with it, but I love it. I want to have conversations that matter with people who care. And if you want to say that's core to what I want to do now and how I live my life, whether that's my neighbor across the fence, whether it's the person next to me in the next airplane seat I crawl into, whether it's a pack of strangers in Spain that we crawl off a plane and hang out with for a few days, I really see my life as I love having those kinds of conversations that matter with people who care. And that's really where my life now finds its purpose. And the writing thing is that a gift, and I love writing, and I know when I spend time there that I can feel free to spend time there because it's something that has borne fruit in my life, so I know it touches other people. But my identity now, and I think my higher purpose, I guess I'd say writing is just the tool. It really isn't even the purpose of the identity.
I think there can be a great danger in your identity being wrapped up in your giftings.
For sure.
I think that's how, gosh, put that on the stock market. Well, what happens if you have an off day? Your sense of value, your stock plunges. And it's like, I don't think that's where God wants it anchored.
Or you pass by the wrong need. I think, you know, the Good Samaritan story, you got people just, I don't know what to do with a broken up guy. I'd just soon rather get on to my discipleship class or whatever. You don't know what's going on there.
Right.
But I do think when you just, you know, I'm a writer, so I don't get involved in needy things overseas, or I don't get involved. It's crazy to limit ourselves to that, because the purpose is God. That's why I love the purpose being somehow centered in the kingdom. And it's, I do think from that sense of purpose and identity, we do get a sense of timing about things. When Jesus could even say, it's not my time yet. And he had a sense, because he knew who he was, that there are times people want stuff from me that I mean, it's just, I don't think this is mine. I don't think if it is mine, it isn't now. Because it doesn't fit in to other things in my life. But always loving and caring for the next person in front of us, that in your path care that we talked about from the Remarkable Replacement Army, I think that's always in play in our lives, and our giftings don't need to take us out of that, thinking, oh, I'm not gifted.
Yeah, I sort of feel like that may fall in the category of a general assignment of reality. We are meant to love one another. And that one another may be just the other right in front of you. And that has great value. Is it something of awesome achievement? I think in heaven it is.
Yeah.
I don't know that it shows up on the way we count things down here, but I do know that those are the things that are the transformative moments in someone's life when all of a sudden, you know, you said you want to have conversations that matter with people who care. Well, part of the key to having that is caring.
Yep.
When I care, gosh, the conversations that happen, they absolutely do matter. Even if it's just a smile and a little poke or tickle with a kid, that moment that just says, hey, I noticed you, you're valuable, and hi. That is a glorious thing.
That's why Jesus would say a cup of cold water is an incredible gift. It's not, I got to write a best-selling book. I got to have a podcast listened to by thousands. It really is the cup of cold water, the washing someone's feet. The next thing you do to serve someone near you is far more significant. And that's where I've come to. The whole idea of being identity-driven, underlying the driven word in the past, was really all about Wayne. And I blew by lots of things that I wouldn't blow by today. I think I'm much more secure in who God's asked me to be, which makes me much more aware of people around me in moments of need and whatever.
See, I think what part of that definition, when you have a sense of, some sense of what that is, I think it allows your soul to have a little less insecurity, a little more security that enables you to not be so focused on self. I think when there's a lot of questions there and you're just like, gosh, you know, there is that sort of anxiety of I don't know what to do. And if that isn't being born out of a sense of dialogue, I think one of the most valuable things I learned is when I don't exactly know what to do or I don't know what to put myself to, you know, maybe God doesn't have a specific task for me at hand. Maybe he isn't a taskmaster that I'm always having to, well, do this so as to validate my existence. Well, I did this today, God. And it's like, you know, that's where I kind of lean on those old guys that kind of chief end of man is to love God and enjoy Him forever. I'm like, that feels nice. I get great enjoyment out of going, that's a worthy pursuit. That will probably bear much fruit in the earth because I'm going to be more focused on Him. And when I'm focused on Him, I tend to be focused on what He cares about.
Yeah, and that gives real meaning to whatever's right in front of you today. I got an email last week from a gal, and she was talking about, you know, not having a real purpose and struggling with some of her identity. And at the end of the show, I'm just a mom of four little girls. I thought, whoa, that's a lousy place to use just. Yeah. I'd have moved that up at the top. But you don't have purpose. You don't have identity. You don't have four little girls God's given to be part of your life, and mothering them is just... And I know sometimes it can feel like, yeah, well, that doesn't really count. What really counts is the people out there on TV or the radio or, you know, no, that's what really counts. The shaping of those lives. I watched Sarah live with such a grace about her life. Sarah has no angst to, you know, let's go speak to the world, to write a book. She's, I think, one of the five people on the planet that don't have an angst to write a book. And
probably only
five. Yeah, probably only five. She's one of those. She loves to garden. She loves her kids and grandkids. She's a competent, very professional businesswoman in the way she does the role that she plays in her life vocationally at the moment. But Sarah has just an ease and graciousness about everyone who comes in the orbit of her life. Just gets loved up on and cared for. And we had a couple people over last night, one we hadn't met or had been with not hardly at all, just because they're doing some things for us. We had them over for dinner. And just enjoyed the evening conversation. Watch the way my wife loves people that come in the orbit of her life, even if she doesn't know them or doesn't know them well. And I love the ease. Sarah never, I've had much more angst in my life about, gosh, am I doing something that counts for God? Is this really significant? I've had those questions. I don't know if Sarah ever has. Sarah's had the grace to be Sarah in the world and to be fully at comfort being, as she describes it, God's daughter in the earth doing what she does today. And she's not just a gardener or just a homemaker or just a mommy or just a grandma. She is all those things and relishes it. And is the life I see shaped in my kids has a lot to do with Sarah and the example that she was to them and the way she loves them.
Yeah, I think when we put scope and scale on stuff, I think that's more the way we're trying to measure something's importance. And we think bigger is necessarily better.
Yeah.
And then so there's almost a knee-jerk effort to respond the opposite. No, no, smaller is better. It's like, I don't know that smaller or bigger matters. I think it matters to say, let God determine the scope and scale. I do think some people are called to things that are of larger size. I think other people are called to, it doesn't matter. They're just doing the thing that's in front of them. And I don't know that, well, it's just that or it's that. It's kind of like, I think it's better to let God bring that to the platform that he purposes or wants as opposed to my need for.
Exactly. Because I think even if your need for notoriety or need to do something significant, I think that flies in the face of God just simply letting you be who he's called you to be. And then wherever scale that goes to, it's just his, not yours. And so you don't have to possess it and own it and try and build a corral around it.
Yeah.
So I think purpose is pretty, I think it's important. I think if people feel like, man, I don't have that identity, I don't have a sense of why God's in my life these days and what it is that I can be. If that's driven by your need to be significant, learn how to lay that down. But that's an honest question to be asking God and to be asking people in your life. You know, what do you see? Do you see anything in me that's valuable? I think that's an important conversation to have, because coming to rest in who God's made you to be and why he put you on the planet, I think is a very powerful thing in the life of a believer.
Yeah, and the whole discovery process, I do think it's helpful to kind of outline the fact that I think it goes from general to specific. I think there's some clear things, loving people in front of you. Okay, if you don't know what specifically you're for, well, maybe start there. And in the engagement of other lives, I'll guarantee you, moments of feedback will come that will bring clarity. And that will allow for a sense of going like, yeah, you know, I think in those moments, that's really the way God designed me. That's where that shines. And when you know that, that's wonderful. But I still would always be available to the very clear and general. It's not like, well, no, I'm this. I'm a specialist. It's like, okay.
Yeah, or the more immediate, just what's God putting in front of me today? And being open to just, I think the highest purpose we all have probably is just love like you've been loved. That's the command Jesus left us with. So you do that on a given day and you're going to be fine. Then in doing that, you're going to find maybe something that you're really gifted at. But how much time, when you talk about things you know you're gifted at, that God's put in your life, how many minutes or hours on a given day does that take up your life?
37
minutes? Yeah. I'm thinking that's about it. Yeah. I still think even if you have that sense of purpose, you don't spend the whole of your life doing that. You spend the whole of your life doing things that maybe allow you to do that for a smaller bit of your life.
There's a whole bit of just the mundane ordinariness of life that I've found incredible value that God places on that I just go, I'm like, you know what? I used to think that... I hope we can skip past this to the important stuff.
Right.
And I'm like, I think I sort of recognize, I'm not sure what is or isn't, as if there is something that's unimportant. It's like, you know what? I think I need to treat the people in front of me, each and every one, as valued and important. And when I do that, I'm pretty sure they'll fall into place however God's designed. Yeah. You know, that sense of, I met with some guy years ago when I was in college, and, you know, it had to do with the whole film industry and stuff like that, and it was a wonderful interview, but he brought me back to the whole bit. He said, Brett, God hadn't called us to be successful. He has called us to be faithful. And, you know, I'm looking at him, he's got a bunch of Emmys behind him, I'm going like, oh, easy for you to say, but... That has always stuck with me with the sense of just going like, you know, that whole need to achieve, that's born out of the insecurity of our hearts. And I think we end up defining things according to the flavor of the month, of the culture around us. And somehow that's what's validated. That's what's important. I'm going, I'm not so sure. I think when I'm faithful just to put my hand to the things that are in front of me, that are there, whether I have clarity or perhaps a lack thereof, as I do that, I think God brings his guidance system to bear on my life. And I don't sometimes I know that, and other times I don't, but I still think he gets me there in a pathway of obedience.
I wonder if some of the clarity comes out of the loving. It's like, I'll get clarity, then I can be loving, instead of, no, as I just look to love people around me and see what open doors are there and participate as God gives me grace to participate, then I may find something open up that I didn't even know was part of my life. And I think trying things is important. People go overseas on a mission trip short term and discover, man, their passion is in a group of people in a culture that they had no idea even existed on the planet, end up spending the rest of their lives there. And so I do think some of that is just start out, see what's there. Go down and volunteer and do some things. Have some experience. Have some life experience. Taste of some stuff just while you're loving, and clarity will come. If you're just going to sit in your high holy mountain until you have a purpose, it may be a long time coming. I don't know that it just filters in with, thus saith the Lord, off you go. Sometimes it just comes as our life unfolds, increasing clarity comes through the way we love and the way people are touched and the conversation and feedback we get.
Yeah, and, you know, when you bump into people that have that totally defined, like, wow, laser beam focus, God bless them. You know, if that's what God has given to you, that's fantastic. I don't want to denigrate that. I just don't know that that is the litmus test of whether I'm tracking or not.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, or even whether they are.
But see, that's where I know I. That's why I said what I did. I know you have a measure of, like, I don't know about that. I think there's people I have enjoyed that they have a very defined, clear sense of that's what I'm called to do. I have enjoyed a measure of those people.
I don't have that. I don't have that problem. You're misunderstanding what I was saying. I think what I was saying was, watch how those people treat people around them. Because if they don't treat them well, if their life is fully just everything serves my vision, they're not going to be fun people to be around. But I do know people as well. Great vision, great drive, great whatever. But watch the way they treat people around them. They'll treat them lovingly, compassionately, caringly. And I think that makes the difference.
Conversation by visiting our website, thegodsjourney.com.